Today on Wings, Megan Murphy from Feminist Current interviews Julie Bindle, author of the book Straight Expectations.
Stop being complacent and buying the lie that toleration is the end of the rainbow.
Stay tuned.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings.
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Has the gay rights movement become more conservative than radical? Julie Bindle, the author of Straight Expectations, a new book that tracks the changes in the gay community in the last 40 years, argues that the gay rights movement has lost its teeth. Bindle is a journalist, a political activist, a founder of Justice for Women, and is co-editor of Gays, a Modern Review. I spoke with her over the phone from her home in London.
The rallying cry of the current gay liberation movement is, we can't help it. We would like to be tolerated and accepted. We ask for no more than that. And we promise that we won't infect anyone else with being gay or lesbian. Because, of course, you either have the gay gene or you don't. So it's quite a handy mantra for the conservative with a small C type campaigners who want equality rather than liberation. I think it's flawed, and I think it's counterproductive. Now, there are many who argue that we should stick to the argument that we can't help it, that it's a gay gene, that we are not responsible for our sexual orientation, preference, or identity. Because they say that there are those living under horrific regimes of illegality, such as in Jamaica, Iran, Russia at the moment, and of course, pockets of the US and indeed the UK, despite the fact that we've got full legal equality. So these gay rights campaigners say, if people in Iran or Jamaica, for example, were to say, look, you know, we don't believe there's a gay gene. We don't have to argue we were born this way. We are entitled to equality and our rights, however we came to be. That the manic, fundamentalist, religious people would therefore insist that if there's nothing innate and immutable about sexual orientation, then it can be changed. Now, I get the point. I understand what they're saying about people living under terrifying regimes. And I understand why some gay men in particular are very frightened to express pride in being gay, preference for being gay. Because, of course, we still remember the bad old days in the UK when legislation such as Section 28 of the Local Authority Act said that we couldn't even say anything positive in schools about being gay, or teachers could be sacked, etc. We all remember the bad old days of the AIDS pandemic, where gay men were talked about as diseased and as bringing it on themselves. But I still think it's cowardly to use immutability as an argument in order to argue that we should be left alone.
You say in the book that you made a conscious and happy choice to be a lesbian. When did you make that choice and why?
It definitely wasn't a choice like a consumer choice. And there was no time that I decided I won't be heterosexual, I won't go down the path of marrying a local boy and having children, etc. Instead, I'll be a lesbian. I suppose what it was that like many women who are now heterosexual, I had crushes on girls at school. I was interested in what alternatives there might be to what looked like a fairly miserable life that I had mapped out for me. I was born into a very happy family and I was very lucky in that way. But, you know, we were working class without much money, and the men in the northeast of England where I'm from were very unreconstructed, very macho. There was very low levels of education, so the women and the men didn't have access to other ideas about how maybe to do relationships differently, didn't have access to the facts about how women are oppressed through patriarchy rather than, you know, that we're destined to be wives and mothers through our biology. So it would have been pretty grim. And I was very lucky because I met feminists when I was a young woman, when I had crushes on girls, and actually, like many straight women now, decided to act out on them. And they said that it was an issue of women having sexual freedom. Lesbianism was about female sexual emancipation. It wasn't a kink in our genes. It wasn't something that had gone wrong with us. It wasn't something that destined us to lives of misery and feeling like aliens. But it was actually something very, very positive. And so at that time, I decided to embrace the identity of being a lesbian feminist as one of great pride and one that I felt was far, far preferable to living as a heterosexual woman under extreme patriarchy.
Is this what you'd call political lesbianism? Would you identify as a political lesbian?
My lesbianism is very political. My identity as a lesbian is very political. But it's a very misunderstood term. I mean, whether it's the so-called sex-positive pro-prostitution lobby or the anti-feminist men's groups or just anti-feminist women, what they might suggest when I say political lesbianism is, oh, that means you don't really fancy women, so therefore you are pretending to be a lesbian. You don't really fancy women. You don't really like sex with women. We're the real deal because we, you know, like getting it on with loads of women, and they identify through sexual acts and sexual practice rather than a sexual identity. It's nonsense to suggest that if women are political about their lesbianism, that they're not so-called real lesbians, whatever that may be. So I tend not to use that phrase about myself for fear of misunderstanding, that people will think that there are those real lesbians out there that are really attracted to women and have sex. And then there are those like me who say, well, we hate men so much that we think that we'll just apply a political label to ourselves and pretend to be lesbians. What it actually means is that you have pride in your sexual identity as a lesbian, and that you understand that there is something called compulsory heterosexuality, that all women, whichever community and culture you are in and you are from, go through to a particular degree. In other words, lesbianism can be a liberation from the tyranny of heterosexuality.
In Straight Expectations, you referenced a booklet written in 1981 called Love Your Enemy, The Debate Between Heterosexual Feminism and Political Lesbianism. And a quote from that booklet reads, "All feminists can and should be lesbians. Our definition of a political lesbian is a woman-identified woman who does not f*** men. It does not mean compulsory sexual activity with women." And another quote that you included in the book reads, "We think serious feminists have no choice but to abandon heterosexuality. Only in the system of oppression that is male supremacy does the oppressor actually invade and colonize the interior of the body of the oppressed." I wonder, what are your thoughts on this argument? I mean, do you think that heterosexuality is incompatible with feminism?
No. When I was a young separatist feminist in the late 1970s, early 80s, I embraced the extremities of feminist politics. And I don't use extremities in a dismissive way, but I'm talking about the way that we are far more radical, usually, when we're younger or when we're newly introduced to a politics, than we then become through pragmatism, through practicality, and through developing nuances in our politics. So if, for example, you were to look back at some people now who are my age, so I'm in my early 50s, who are of the left, they often have pasts, their political pasts, where they were on the very hard left. So they may have been radical Marxists, Leninists, Trotskyists. And there was doctrine exactly like that in tone and extremity in many of the papers that were pored over by young leftist radical men and women. So the style and the tone of Love Your Enemy today feels inconsistent with the way that we feminists, who are lesbian feminists, radical feminists, which certainly I am, live our lives. Now, I do still think, however, that we don't talk about heterosexuality enough. So what that paper, Love Your Enemy, did was it actually reminded the straight feminists of the time, and this was the height of the women's liberation movement in the US and the UK, It reminded those women that they were straight, that they were heterosexual, that this was not an accident of birth, that everything, sexuality, is political under a system of patriarchy. And so it reminded those women that they are also called something. We weren't just the ones who were the lesbians. They were the heterosexuals. And it enabled a debate and a discussion, often heated, sometimes negative, sometimes not, between lesbians and heterosexual feminists about the privilege that they gained through being in straight relationships with men and often the oppression that they faced. So, no, I don't think feminism and heterosexuality is incompatible as such, but I do think there are tensions for many radical feminists who choose to live with and have men as lovers and fathers of their children, etc. Because how could it be not? Women are the only oppressed group that are expected to love our oppressors, and that can often make for very, very messy relationships.
I wonder, do you think that either heterosexuality or homosexuality can be innate or biological? I mean, do you think that it's always primarily about socialization? Do you think that it's always a choice? I mean, what do you think about that?
I wish we had another word between choice or innateness, because I think it's much more nuanced and messy than that. And I think that it depends on life experiences, opportunities, who you meet, how open your mind is, or how closed the minds of those around you are. So I don't think it's possible that some, for example, gay men, have innate, biologically determined sexual preference or attraction, and women don't. I think either there is a gay gene, that's a term that scientists would never use, but I'm using the sort of shorthand layperson term. Either there is a gay gene, an innateness about our sexual preference, or there isn't. And some gay men who are much more conservative usually than lesbians, because we have to fight sexism as well as concern ourselves with other forms of bigotry, gay men will say, but maybe gay men then are hardwired to be gay because we could never imagine any other way, and lesbians aren't. That's ridiculous. So no, there's never been a discovery of a gay gene. Now, scientists have been looking for the gay gene for decades, and in fact the Nazis took it very seriously, looking for what made people different from the white heterosexual male. And these experiments have a very shameful history, and it was never for good reason that these experiments or these scientific tests were done looking for immutability. Now, scientists today, looking for a biological basis to our sexual attraction, are mainly gay men. They're not Nazis. They're not looking to find a gay gene in order to give heterosexuals the opportunity to abort us if they were to find out that they were carrying a gay fetus. But they're not going to find one. They would have done by now. And if they were to do so, I can't imagine how it would help lesbians and gay men at all. Because, of course, when we argue for our rights, we should argue for our rights on the basis that we are human beings. We shouldn't argue for our rights on the basis that we were born this way. It hasn't helped black people. Of course, black people are born that way. Females are born that way. And we have terrible racism and sexism. So it's not going to help if we were to identify a gay gene. The bigots would still come after us. Now, one example of this is when I went to Denver, Colorado, as part of my book research as an undercover journalist to undergo gay conversion therapy at a Christian therapy center. I met the survivors of gay conversion therapy, and I had the therapy myself. And I'm telling you, these people who want to convert us, they don't care whether there's a gay gene or not. They don't care whether we were born that way or not. They just want us to stop doing it.
On Wings, you're listening to an interview with Julie Bindle, author of the book Straight Expectations. In Chapter 2, Julie goes undercover, calling herself Joanna, to undergo conversion therapy with an organization called Janelle Hallman and Associates, which is located in a small town near Denver, Colorado. They saw her lesbianism as something of a bad habit, as well as a symptom of emotional dependency she could be treated for or heal from. After her experience in Denver, she writes, hours of being told I need fixing, despite there being nothing damaged, took its toll. I began to question whether there was something broken in me that had caused me to go off the rails and into lesbianism. I left Denver with a heavy heart, weeping for all of those innocent men and women who find themselves embroiled in the conversion racket. This is Anti-Gay Bigotry presented as support for unhappy lesbians and gay men. My concern about gay conversion therapy is that in order to heal someone, you have to believe they are broken and damaged. We are not. We now return to the interview.
So you're opposed to gay marriage, which is something that the vast majority of liberals and progressives support unequivocally and without much thought. I wonder if you can talk about why you oppose gay marriage.
I'm pro-equality. So, of course, if there are those who say that lesbians and gay men shouldn't marry but heterosexuals can, then that's discrimination. It's bigotry. If they were to say that Jews can have a civil partnership but they can't have marriage the same as non-Jews, we would immediately identify that as anti-Semitism. We need equality, of course, in the law. But I would rather abolish marriage as an institution and offer civil partnership rights for everyone. As lesbians and gay men, we've had too much state interference in our relationships in the past. Marriage has been terrible for women, where the state literally controls the rest of their lives. They are handed from a patriarchal father to a patriarchal husband, and the state interferes, therefore, in her relationship. So we have a bad history. But the other reason I'm really not so enamoured with the notion that now that gays and lesbians can marry, you know, translates into us having full equality and liberation, is you just have to look around you. You have to look around what's happening in the states in the US where gay couples can marry, or those countries that are hideously backward on women's rights, like some countries in South America, where they have championed gay marriage. But there's dreadful gender oppression in other ways, because marriage is a deeply conservative system. And I think that that's why lesbians and gays were invited to the party. It's a failing institution. Fewer heterosexuals are going into it in the West. And I think that they needed us to shore up the numbers. But it also gives many gay activists, lesbians and gay activists, the impression that all is now well, that we've reached the pinnacle of our liberation. And that's really dangerous because there are so many ways in which we are still oppressed and in danger from bigotry, and we still haven't reached our full potential. So it's curbing our enthusiasm to continue the fight against oppression and inequality.
And what kind of response you get when you talk about your position?
You know, I'm told that that means that I'm against gay liberation or gay equality. Well, as I explain, I'm against all marriage across the board. And often I'm told that, you know, I'm a spoiled sport, I'm a party pooper. Well, if you want to have a party to celebrate your relationship, if you want to get married, go ahead and do it. But recognise it as a neoliberal system that you are marrying into a conservative system that's been handed to us to shut us up. And enjoy your day and enjoy your marriage, but don't pretend that this means that we're one step closer to liberation, because it doesn't.
I've read a few articles recently in the past year that look at the fact that while the gay rights movement continues to make progress, continually women seem to be doing worse in many ways. You know, our rights and our lives are under attack still. We face seemingly ever more misogyny. I wonder if you see that happening, and if so, why you think that is?
Oh, I really see that happening, and I don't think that it's that much of a contradiction in a way. I think many gay rights now, as they're being fought and won, are deeply conservative. Like, please tolerate us, and we will be well behaved. You know, I don't want to be tolerated. You tolerate bad wine, you tolerate bad weather, you tolerate a boring relative. I want to be respected and appreciated for who I am, just like everybody else wants to be. We've been railroaded, I think, into expecting the very least, just so the state will leave us alone and so that we can get a badge of approval from the status quo, from the heterosexual, you know, white, middle-class status quo. And so the reason why I think we're losing our grip on women's liberation and on fighting the fight to free us from sexual abuse and depression, men's violence, is because often we're the same people. Lesbian feminists have traditionally been the ones at the forefront of campaigning against men's violence towards women. And I think we've been neutered and we've become complacent. And I think that the more conservative Republican governments throw us a few crumbs and say, look, we'll tolerate you, the more likely that is to have a knock-on effect to other social movements. And the women's liberation movement and the gay liberation movement are intertwined. They always have been. Because the sexism that women get, the misogyny that women get, can also be seen in the way that some gay men are treated.
You wrote about lesbians walking out of the gay liberation front en masse in the 70s because sexism coming from gay men, they would have liked to see as or would have hoped would be their allies. I wonder if you see misogyny happening in the gay community today. Do you think any of this has changed?
I think things are so grim in the world right now, politically, financially, socially, and I'm just talking about the West, that many more people are looking towards a politics of change and becoming politicised. And there are some young gay men who are sick and tired of going out onto the scene and looking at the magazines in the clubs, and all they can see is adverts for prostitution. They can hear older gay men talk about twinkies, meaning young, barely legal men who they want to have sex with. There's all kinds of exploitation of young gay men in pornography. So I think the chickens are coming home to roost in a way, and some of the younger men are challenging it. But certainly gay men's culture is misogynistic in many ways and has an effect on the way that they see and treat women, in particular lesbians. So although we allied ourselves with gay men in the 1980s when we had a politics of equality, when we became much more staid, but also we had to fight the dreadful bigotry through the AIDS pandemic, the way that gay men would be blamed as disease carriers and the wrath of God and everything. You know, now I think that we need to go our separate ways politically, because lesbians, because we're women, have to carry on fighting for women's liberation. And we can't deal with the sexism of gay men and get on with that very easily. So I think that we should support each other. And of course, you know, we all have personal friends that cross many divides. But politically, I think that we should really pull apart the ever-growing LGBTQIA. I mean, it's getting ridiculous. Mm-hmm. You know, the only people who are not included in that alphabet soup, the man who washes his car on a Sunday morning, who lives in the suburbs, who's heterosexual, has sex with his wife in a missionary position once a week. Maybe he's not involved in that list. Everybody else is. And so lesbians become just submerged with all the other identities.
You write about how, you know, the oppression of gay men is very much connected to misogyny and sexism.
You know, the daily grind of being an out gay visible man and being humiliated and often sexually humiliated for being so obvious, you know, takes its toll. And I think we've got to look at the effects that sexual abuse has on different communities of people. Anyone who's sexually brutalized has an option as to whether to go on and be a brutalizer, in other words, play out the power that they've been given, or fight for the rights of others that have been sexually brutalized. If you have a choice, then many men under patriarchy will choose to stay on top. And so many young men who were sexually violated, sexually abused as children, through the same process as girls, are sexually abused, same perpetrators, same situation pretty much, they often act out and take out their anger and frustration in their relationships with other gay men, which is why we've got such vicious pornography within the gay market, or sometimes towards women. And I think that women can become horrible if, you know, we don't get the support that we need and take the right path in working out what's happened to us when we've been sexually abused, sexually violated. But we have fewer options to become the aggressor because there's always somebody on top. Often now, with the richer, well-off gay men in the West, they will rent a womb of a woman, you know, often in India or Ukraine, where they're very, very poor, often pimped by their husbands, often gestational surrogates because they have no other choice to earn money. And these gay men think that this is fine. You know, they've been oppressed. They haven't been able to foster and adopt in the past. The law was against them. Social attitudes were against them in terms of becoming parents. So they will rent a womb and have a baby grown for them, and they will therefore have their product at the end of that gestational period. Since when did we become a community that did not care about the oppression of others at all when we're directly benefiting from it? You can't on the one hand say we've been oppressed through the legal and social systems that's prevented us from being parents, but will now oppress a poor woman in India who's going to carry our child for us and not care about her circumstances or the health risks to her.
What direction would you like to see the gay rights movement take? What issues would you like to see the gay community take on? I mean, switching paths from this conservatism and this anti-radicalism, like anti-feminism in many ways, what would you like to see happen? What needs to happen?
I want to see people stopping pretending, even if they don't do anything else, that our job is done, that we've reached the pinnacle of our liberation, that gay marriage and the opportunity for lesbians and gay men to foster, adopt and have their own children means that we have got it all, that we've reached the end of the rainbow. I want us at least to stop using the word tolerant as though it's positive and see the word tolerance and tolerant and tolerated as wholly negative words that we should never aspire to, and to at least start to use the language of liberation again, to recognise that the status quo really needs dismantling and rebuilding rather than us just joining it. But really I'd like those of us that have privilege, those of us that have enough time to support other young gay people coming out, those of us that can support lesbians and gay men who are much worse off in other countries, that we do so, that we don't fly into other countries like the saviours, that we don't patronise people, that we do so when invited, but that we form a global movement against the oppression of lesbians and gays that also involves feminism and that also takes its lessons from the great civil rights movements of our time, and not to ignore them. But we must at least stop being complacent and buying the lie that toleration is the end of the rainbow. It is not.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me today. I really appreciate it. It was wonderful.
My pleasure talking to you, Megan, always.
You just heard an interview with Julie Bindle, author of Straight Expectations, What Does It Mean to Be Gay Today?, published by Guardian Books. Her website is juliebindle.org, and she tweets at @BindleJ. That is all the time we have for today. I'm Megan Murphy.
For more about Wings, visit our website, wings.org. Thank you to all our supporters, including your community radio station, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, editor of the book Women and the Gift Economy. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle is Cast. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.